This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill. The August House is the house of the people, not a sanctuary for frogs. We speak to the UMNO member of Pengerang who wrote these words recently and is obviously a strong proponent of the anti-hopping law, and she is YB Datuk Sri Azalina Othman. Thank you for joining us on The Breakfast Grill again, Datuk. We honestly don't get enough chances to speak to UMNO MPs and also women reps in Parliament. But firstly, I want to discuss the recent Cabinet decision to postpone the tabling of the anti-hopping law in this parliamentary session. Now, Home Minister Datuk Sri Hamzah Zainuddin said that more studies and engagement needs to be done, especially with other stakeholders like Barisan Nasional. YB, help us understand, you know, where and what is the resistance when it comes to this bill? What needs to be done to push it forward?
I think let's go down to basic. Here, number one, I am just the advisor. I do not sit in for a cabinet meeting. I was the former law minister under a different prime minister. So I've been there, I've been everywhere, and I've been also opposition, I've been government, I've been in the coalition government, became deputy speaker, resigned, and now I'm back as advisor to the prime minister. Right? Okay, you must understand the process of making law in Malaysia because the government has to carry the bill. That is the requirement of the procedure. So when the bill is drafted by government, it does not necessarily mean that it will be accepted because the minister in charge will have to bring to cabinet again to table for affirmation support. Now, if assuming the government is a coalition government or mixed government and there's no majority government, definitely things will move and it's very fluid and it's not consistent. So to be very, very honest, the last sitting, we were all taken by surprise because there is a technical a committee for the anti-hopping law represented by all political party representatives, chaired by the law minister, and I sit in that technical committee as a member of UMNO / Barisan Nasional, and I'm also the head of legal and advice for BN, which means to say I represented my party in that meeting, not representing the government. So you have to emphasize on that.
Okay? Yes.
Number one. Number two, before the last sitting, it was all agreed. The bill was ready. And all of us as politicians representing our party, we sat down, we debated for a few months and we came out with an agreement on how we want to see the anti-hopping law to be drafted in what manner and how it should look like. Okay. But nevertheless, we knew there would be two more obstacles. Number one, the cabinet has to approve the final bill. Number two, the MPs have to accept and debate on it. Because this particular bill is a bit special because you need to do an amendment. And to amend the constitution, you need 2/3, which is 148, because we have 222 MPs. True enough, and what you said, you're right. The cabinet rejected it a few weeks ago. I'm not part of cabinet meeting, so I don't know what are the grounds. But then recently, for the past few days, the minister have met again all the political party leaders now to talk again about the bill. And I think one of the biggest challenge is a lot of senior politicians, if I may assume, are a bit reluctant on the bill for various reasons. Number one, they may be reluctant. Number two, they want the bill, but they're very worried about the outcome if the bill is being created. Now, okay, because, you know, if you look at all my literature when I've been writing a lot of online media, you can see that I have explained and explored the many kinds of hopping.
Yes.
So you must understand the hopping can be willfully, whereby you hop because you just for personal gain, personal promotion, or you can hop because your whole party is moving. Is that considered a colony hop? You know, frogs jump together. It's a colony hop. Or you are being in a situation of constructive dismissal. The party doesn't like you, creates a lot of problem for you. So in the end, you have to leave. So do you blame that person because he or she have to leave? And then lastly, you have a situation of independent MPs who came in freely. So those are the scenarios that I think politicians are looking at the interpretation. Yeah.
So it's not because there's a resistance to it in the sense that, you know, all parties, and I'll be honest, all parties have in some form or another been a beneficiary of MPs switching camps. I mean, state and even federal governments have changed because of what we call these frogs. Do you think that's the reason the resistance comes?
You know, Wong, one thing about law, and you must understand law, it always depends on who's interpreting it. And if you look at politicians or political party Of course, they don't want to be controlled. Why would you want someone to tell you what you and you can cannot do? Mm. But for the voters, the rakyat, you would want your MP to stay on because for you, I voted you to service me. Suddenly, after you win and all the hard work, canvassing for vote, all the volunteers on the ground, posters going up here, there and everywhere, and you decide to walk away. I'm like, at the end of the day, my emphasization here is about the voters, the betrayal of the voters. That's it.
I'm going to go back a little bit in history, but isn't there a sense of this actually the reason why there was a change in federal government? Because there were certain camps that moved. And
that's
this
why
is,
I agree.
That so UMNO is a beneficiary because, to be fair, Dr. Sri Ismail Sabri is the Prime Minister of Malaysia today.
That's
as
what
a result
I
of it.
Yeah. But the Sheraton move came out with a Prime Minister not from UMNO.
Admittedly, okay, at that stage, but to today, he is.
At that stage, we were not the Prime Minister. We were not leading. It was led by someone from Pakatan Harapan Bloc and a few of them who decided to leave. And along the way, the UMNO Bloc left us along the way because the people in UMNO, if you notice, the MPs in UMNO left us before the government was formed. In the process, maybe there was discussion. So they just moved. So we sued them. UMNO sued them. We did sue them. But along the way, the suit was dropped. But we did sue all of them. I think the first move was by almost 20 or 22 MPs. I'm not sure. I don't remember the numbers. That was the first move.
Yeah, but Dato' Sri, if we look at what happened post-Langkah Sheraton, Tan Sri Muhyiddin's government could not have been formed without the support of UMNO also.
But the support of UMNO was a support whereby the government that was formed went into the basis of the constitution by saying that they wanted the Prime Minister to be counted in by the existing MPs. Mm. Which means to say, what happened was that they were interpreting Article 43. If you look at the article at that junction, what happened was that there was an interpretation that says, okay, Article 43 looks into the powers of the discretion of the King to take among the existing MPs to become leader of the majority or leader of the House. It was negotiated then. Now, the point here is that as far as my party was concerned then, we were representing ourselves. When it's my party, I don't know other party. When that was discussed openly, the discussion was based on, okay, we wanted the party to be separated from the MPs because the MP that made that decision, being still some of them, still as of myself being a member of UMNO, what transpired was that this is whereby the difference is the fact that it was not the party that made the move by saying, okay, the Supreme Council made a decision. It was the structure behind it was that the MP made that decision and told the party members and the Supreme Council members that this is what they want to do because this is part of what they want to be. And if you notice, I have to be very honest here, right? If you notice, the personalities of Tan Sri Muhyiddin's government coming from UMNO or who was still from UMNO, and today the personality of Prime Minister Ismail Sabri's government are not leaders of the Supreme Council of the CWC in UMNO.
Yes.
Right. If you look at Bersatu, the top bosses are ministers, the first round.
Yes.
Right? The Ketua Wanita is a minister, Ketua Muda, everybody was, whoever is from the president, deputy president to the VP. Same thing with the party of PAS. The bosses are all holding cabinet posts. UMNO, unfortunately, even though we had MPs, if you take into account the reasons why some of the MPs was not taken, number one, because, cluster mahkamah. Okay, fine. But there were some MPs who are not cluster mahkamah. They were also not taken in from the CWC, which is the Supreme Council. And then it went on the MPs because this is to prove to you the decision was more of the MPs themselves being appointed the new Prime Minister on the basis that who he wanted. And Ismail Sabri, Prime Minister Ismail Sabri, did the same thing.
So does this suggest disunity within the UMNO party? Different factions emerging then?
No, this shows that what transpired after the Sheraton move, I may be wrong, this is my assumption. If I read together with Article 43, a lot of decision was based on the members of parliament themselves. Now, let's go back one step. The coalition agreement between UMNO, Bersatu or PN and Bersatu, that was whereby the agreement was done between PN and UMNO, and UMNO was part of Muafakat National. Along the way, Muafakat just, we were not like, we couldn't even sleep together. And then this state election for Melaka and Johor.
Yeah, it doesn't look like so it exists.
There is no more love.
Yes.
And affection. Okay, now, coming back. I got to reverse a few steps behind. You see this argument on the consistency of my statement is the MOU is signed by the government and PH. Not PH and UMNO, PH and Bersatu, PH and PAS. No, it was PH plus government. And government was represented by MPs. Because the one that witnessed is the Speaker of both Houses of Parliament. It's an MOU, it's not binding.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, there was some representation that said it was a contract. No, it's just a MOU, an agreement.
So, Dr. Sri, but you seem to be a proponent of this MOU. You also seem to be a proponent of bipartisan politics. So, are you against it?
No, I was not the proponent of this particular MOU. When I wrote about coalition government, if you see my writing in the beginning when I was an opposition member, and then the Sheraton move, I explained what we needed was a written agreement that had common principles and objective. Principle, objective, policies. The reason why I wanted that so that my party can have a vet of all this relationship. And then maybe my party could say, well, let the party be represented by members of parliament who are represented in the CWC. Let senior members take lead so that we can discuss cabinet issue at Supreme Council meeting. Because PAS and Bersatu has that advantage. Whatever they have decided, even today, whether the PAS president doesn't sit in the cabinet, he is holding a very high post that he can influence cabinet decision, so as the president for Bersatu.
Is this the case in UMNO then, that major decisions are not taken by the senior leaders within UMNO?
No, the case in UMNO is that because it's a big organization, it has to be run properly. It's like you're not dealing with a $2 company. Well, you're dealing with a company with so many, we've got 3.5 million shareholders. All right, and all this, we have a branch of 190 over branches. We're not a new party that is being formed by like 50 or 60 people and canvassing rakyat to support them because they're already in government. That is so easy to control. But everything we decide, we have a general assembly. Before people think, whenever party UMNO decide, the government will follow suit. But no, the equation is different. Okay. The government is a coalition government and UMNO is a small role in a coalition government. Except that the MPs that gave the government to this government agreed that Ismail Sabri will lead the government and Pakatan Harapan MPs, which is more than 88 together, plus independent MP, decided also not to support the Prime Minister Ismail but indirectly give him temporary support through an MOU so that he can finish whatever he needs to finish to stabilize the government. So it's the same thing, but the entry door is different.
Okay.
The jumping of the window is different. So you don't go through the back door. No, you go up the roof. So that's basically it.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is MP for Pengerang and the first Deputy Woman Speaker for Parliament, Dato' Sri Azalina Othman. When we come back, it's UMNO divided and it's a general election, the best way forward for Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. In the hot seat this morning is Dato' Sri Azalina Othman, Special Advisor on Law and Human Rights to the Prime Minister. Just before the break, the importance of the anti-hopping law, and was the MOU a step in the right direction for Malaysian politics? Dato' Sri, I want to stay on this topic of UMNO because I get the sense that there's a lack of unity or central decision-making. So you have MPs who are in cabinet, and then, of course, you have the senior leaders of the Supreme Council. But they don't necessarily see eye to eye or that there is sufficient communication between the two. Is that the case?
Well, I think, Wong, you must understand. Whatever, if the government of the day is led by a personality from UMNO MP, rakyat wouldn't know the difference, right, on the percentage of representation in government.
No.
So sometimes when government make wrong decision, the party gets blamed. If you look at all my write-up, I said every coalition government doesn't last more than 22 months, mostly. The reason is because of different policies and ideologies and principles. But in Kuala country, in European countries, okay, Wong, it can last because the religion and race is almost the same.
Or maybe it's just a more mature democracy and are we heading in that direction? Is it possible?
Wong, I'm giving more respect to Malaysian politicians because of our differences more than anything lah. You want me to go on maturity, I can go on a whole 9 yards, right? But I'm not going to do that because there will be a different breakfast grill with you.
Yes.
The point I'm trying to emphasize is that you must understand what is difference between us and other countries is that this coalition is not only a coalition of different political parties, different race, different religion. The coalition that talks about consistency or non-consistency in so many things. But as far as my party is concerned, and as I said to you, the shareholders are huge, 3.5 million. And then if a decision is made, remember not before the assembly, the Prime Minister announced for the iCitra, the leaders of my political party continuously talking about iCitra, but the government still didn't want to move. The Minister of Finance keeps saying no, 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 no until the very end. But those are the issues that we were facing when we were going down for Melaka and Johor election. But if we were really running the country 110% is what everybody is assuming, then we would have been having an easy, busy, breezy working in Melaka and Johor, but we didn't.
So Dr. Sri, does it mean that actually you are for early general elections then to get a fresh mandate from the rakyat rather than this uncertainty?
No, if I look at Melaka and Johor, right, the reason why in Melaka and Johor they went for a state election because they couldn't govern, especially Johor, because the numbers were so near. A lot of state laws could not be passed. And I witnessed myself as the member of parliament for Johor. So now coming back to the federal government, it is a bigger conflict, not from the political side. But I think if the government servants is answerable to government leaders who are politicians, who are ministers from different coalition government, and the coalition relationship has no written agreement. There is no written agreement between PAS, Bersatu and UMNO with Prime Minister Ismail Sabri as Prime Minister. You know, they may have something during Tan Sri Muhyiddin as Prime Minister. But even though that, there was no agreement on exit clause. There is no terms and reference on what you agree or agree or disagree. That is what I assume because I've not seen, because I'm in charge of legal for Barisan Nasional. I've not seen a proper coalition agreement done for a second round of government, because I think, to be very, very honest, PH with the government has got a very good deal, because PH with the government today, the political parties in PH has a committee, is able to come up with certain agreement and whatever.
But they would argue that they have not been able to enforce some parts of the MOU, for example.
But that is whereby the members that sat during the MOU have to make a decision on that. Yeah. I don't see it in the MOU.
But we can't rewind the fact that the MOU is in the form that it is, right? So is the best way forward either a fresh MOU come July when the first MOU expires, or perhaps just call for an early general elections?
Well, I think for my party, we don't agree on an extension of the MOU. But even if the government needs to, on whatever basis, I believe this time around, the government has to bring my party part of the MOU if that's what the government wants. But we are not part of an MOU. We are part of the MOU by proxy of our representative in our political party members who are members of parliament. By being a proxy member of our political party, whatever you agree, the political party on the ground may also disagree. So that's why I keep saying in a big political party like UMNO, it's not an easy, straightforward discussion that, you know, whatever the president says, it goes.
Yeah. Like
so,
you say.
So that's what I'm trying to emphasize. Yeah.
Like you say, Dr. Sri, no permanent friends, no permanent enemies in politics. Today, your friends, tomorrow, your enemies. But I want to shift our conversation a little bit towards the sense I get of political fatigue, and evidence of this is the lower and lower voter turnout at each state elections. Now, there's some sense of frustration that politicians and even MPs or ADUNs are not working for the rakyat but themselves. Would you agree with this, that there's just way too much politicking at every political party?
No, I think one of the biggest challenges is that it's so easy for politicians to push blame. I can't do it because this other person is in charge. You know, I cannot make a decision because the other person is part of the MOU. And you keep pushing the responsibility and blame. So, of course, it's so easy to just say that, well, you know, I can't do it, I can't decide. But I think your question, you should ask government servants at state and federal government. I think they really have a big headache. I don't know about the markets out there, especially for business people. Are they really affected by these uncertainties? Because maybe if I was an investor and I'm doing a big, huge business, and I want to come into Malaysia and invest. You know, of course, I get nervous with political uncertainties. That's why stabilization is important. And a lot of people believe that if you want stabilization, you have to have an early general election. It sounds right on paper, but the problem here, if the election goes for general election and the same problem comes in, you don't have an outright outcome and you don't have a single party majority government, you have the voters voting for maybe independent blocs, then you have uncertainties, and then you don't have the anti-hopping law. Of course, you're going to create more chaos and not many investors are going to come in and invest.
So this goes back to the fact that maybe we do need to push forward in terms of reform, be it especially parliamentary reform. So have parliamentary committees, have robust government institutions. Is that what we clearly need?
Yeah. That's why what you're doing is that you're going down to the basic, the real basis of everything. Get the structure right first. If the structure is right, like any house, the structure is strong, you can do so many renovations after that. But if the structure is not strong, then you have this problem because you really don't know whether the door or the window or the boom boom is going to move. And this is what's happening. You're paying every contractor out there to hold on the structure. But people are exhausted. How long can you keep negotiating? Because at the end of the day, when the rakyat demand for things to be... Rakyat just wants to be serviced in their constituency.
Yeah.
To be very honest.
But, the politicians don't seem to want to move when it comes to reform. There's a lot of discussion in terms of parliamentary reform. There's a lot of talk given to the necessity of it, but very, very slow when it comes to implementing any of it.
That's a structural change. Mm. If you get the structure right, it doesn't matter who's in charge because then you're able to call back. But your right to hire, no right to fire. You know, at the end of the day, it's just like a company, right? You appoint someone to be board of directors or GM or VP. And then the person doesn't perform. You have to wait until, a whole year to evaluate on performance. Mm. And then you decide to give bonus or you don't give bonus. But, you know, you want to terminate anyone right now. You know, people will sue you left, right and centre. So
but do you think there's that sense of urgency within UMNO members that they should actually push for this structural reform? Or are you the lone voice in the party, though?
Well, to be very honest, the president, the deputy president and my party in the state and Melaka and Johor election is an evaluation of we walk the talk. Everyone's talking about it. You can go back to all our social media entry. We have been communicating about reform. Of course, I have been going around to the state, UMNO, speak about reform and explain to them about reform. And I've spoken about separation of the AG and we wanted the RCI. I know we've been saying a lot of things, but of course, again, because we are not majority in the government, a lot of things that we say cannot be implemented because the government is represented by our wakil that has to keep negotiating. That's why I'm saying I don't know what happens in cabinet. Maybe they voted. As I said, we're only 34%. We are 11 MPs, 11 ministers plus one prime minister.
Mm.
And how do you tell them what to do?
On a special extended breakfast grill, we are speaking to MP for Pengerang and Special Advisor on Law and Human Rights to the Prime Minister. When we come back from the 8:30 a.m. news bulletin, why are women issues put on the back burner in Parliament? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to a special extended breakfast grill. In the hot seat this morning is Dato' Sri Azalina Othman, Special Advisor on Law and Human Rights to the Prime Minister. Just before the 8:30 a.m. news bulletin, we were talking about UMNO and are there fissures in the party. So, Dato' Sri, I want to talk about women's issues. I know it is something you are well known for pushing. But I think if we look at the current situation, clearly there are still gaps in terms of legislation, be it in whether it's sexual harassment bill, child marriage, and even gender bias in the workplace. But do you find it extremely challenging to change the mindset of, let's say, even your male colleagues in UMNO who are MPs to support these causes?
That's why to make laws, to have new laws, to have new understanding is a whole long battle. You have to make them understand that these are changes. Like, for example, the issues of citizenship.
Yes.
I keep telling my leaders that our voters are more than 51% women. You cannot avoid women issues. Women issues are a very relevant issue. Okay, we have only 18 because we want young people to come out and vote. Those are youngest. But what about women out there who are also voters and they've always been very loyal voters?
Yeah. But you've been an MP since 2004. So it's been quite a long time. Has there been even a change in terms of opinions?
Yeah, of course we were. I mean, I had the Sexual Offences Against Children Act being passed when I was the law minister. And we were so excited about the law, and because we wanted to stop grooming. We were talking about a lot of things, child marriages, so many things we were talking when we were creating the law. And then we lost the election. And a new government came in. I would assume the new government would pick up on good laws and talk about it and continue, because the new government also had women representation at the highest level of cabinet. But there were a lot of issues were set aside and they were focusing on different things. I can't be telling them what to do.
Mm.
But as far as my party is concerned, I believe when we became opposition, I had the opportunity, because everybody wasn't that busy, to make them really understand that these changes are needed. And to be very, very honest, Wong, I've not been stopped by my party leaders as of today, being chair for the Select Committee for Women and Children, and I come up with statements. No one in my party called me up and stopped me or raising a CWC meeting and say, well, you cannot say like this, you can't say like that. Nobody stops me. I'm able to just be able to work on as a Select Committee and sound as if I'm an opposition member, because my party doesn't tell me stop talking about it. And they are encouraging me when it comes to anti-hopping and all that. So I think you have to really, as I say, measure. We walk the talk. What we say, we do. Maybe it takes a longer time because we're not in full power.
But you have some UMNO MPs who have said rather allegedly racist and colorist and sexist remarks even in the August House. And this is, of course, I think, UMNO Baling MP, Dato' Abdul Aziz Abdul Rahim, towards another MP, Kasturi Pato, in Parliament. So you, as a party, may have a certain policy stance, but individual members don't necessarily always reflect that, do
that's
they?
That's why the Parliament has got their own in-house disciplinary setup, like the rights and privileges. And MPs who are affected can raise it up. And one thing you must understand, I keep saying since day one, the Parliament must be independent. Because the Parliament must be seen as a separate legal, separate entity, separation of powers between legislative, executive and judiciary.
Yeah.
Because if the Parliament, that's why the government agrees MOU on the Parliament Services Act. Because
but the
Parliament
yeah,
must
ideally,
be run independent.
But ideally, that's true. But does does UMNO actually initiate any disciplinary action against members who make such statements?
As far as UMNO is concerned, we have a disciplinary committee. If anyone who feels, or any member who's offended, like, for example, on the sexual harassment bill coming to an act that the King has announced about it, the Prime Minister has spoken about it, once that is in existence, I think the party must also be very serious that you cannot do this anymore because there's an existing law. So all I'm saying is that at the end of the day, again and again and again, I always believe in structural change. It doesn't matter that who are minding any organization or authority, but there must be a structure who are minding the minders. The same thing with Parliament. Parliament must be really seen to be independent. Motion must be allowed to be carried forward. And then you must reprimand. Means you reprimand. You can't reprimand on favoritism. Do you like this MP? You don't reprimand. You don't like this MP? You reprimand. These are things that you cannot go on, because the Parliament, the August House is somewhere we are able to be able to stand up and voice grievances and issues affecting our constituency. And we cannot be punished by our parties for that. But if we are misbehaving for whatever reasons, then the party has to take action. But you know, some of the party members are also in debate, raising issues on our party leadership openly, not necessarily the opposition. You know that. You can.
Yeah.
Yeah. So was action taken against anyone, any of the MP? Was a disciplinary action being mooted in? I don't know, because I do not sit in the disciplinary committee. I've not seen and I've not heard.
And I'm also curious to, Dato' Sri, since you talk about, you know, I guess, action, what action will actually then be taken against this court cluster? Because we have Dato' Sri Najib Razak and Dato' Sri Zahid still facing legal charges, right? What happens if the court, there's finally, the verdict is guilty and there's no cause for appeal? What would the party do? Will they walk the talk?
We have the rules and regulation in the party. Of course, what? I mean, the party is the party. Same thing, or even DAP. DAP also got some court cluster. They also have got their own disciplinary procedure. I mean, all that is done. I mean, like, to be fair, I keep saying to everyone that this is a party matter. Whatever goes outside, let the court decide. But internally, we will sort it out. We will sort it out ourselves because we are a political party. This is a membership. I mean, this, I don't know, this is not a Tapuai party or Avon party. But
so how will UMNO sort it out? What are the rules regarding this then? Or are there no rules?
They have their own rules. They have a disciplinary board. They have their own thing. But, you know, I cannot be jumping the gun because for me, a person has a right for appeal. You know, being a practicing lawyer before, you know, I always have to give in. I have to always to respect due process. Well,
yeah, that's why I said if there's no recourse for appeal, it's at its final stage.
Yeah, but then there is a procedure in the party and the disciplinary of anyone wants to take is within the party. But when the matter comes to the table and it's on the table, then each of us will have a say. But of course, whatever our decision or our discussion is considered privileged and confidential.
Okay.
But the point here is that we have to give them the benefit of doubt.
Until the courts finally decide. But one question from us, for me actually. You mentioned Pengerang, of course, that's your constituency. You've been MP there since 2004. Are you still planning to run in GE15?
Inshallah.
On that note, thank you for your time today on The Breakfast Grill. Was Dato' Sri Azalina Othman, MP for Pengerang and Special Advisor for Law and Human Rights to the Prime Minister. I'm Wong Shaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile. Unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.